Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. And this is Faith Radio Mornings. Good morning. I'm Paul Perreault filling in for Peter Kapsner on this day after Thanksgiving. Good to have you along this morning. Maybe in your fridge right now there's a big container of leftover mashed potatoes from yesterday's Thanksgiving feast. Well, I'm going to talk potatoes, and I don't mean small potatoes. Great story out of Clear Lake, Minnesota, just northwest of the Twin Cities. There's a family farm up there, the Edling Farms. They're potato farmers. Brett Edling is one of the farm members of the family. And 7 years ago, he was approached by a pastor at Union Gospel Mission down in the Twin Cities asking, hey, can you donate some potatoes to help out the mission for Thanksgiving? Well, that developed into a relationship with the Union Gospel Mission and that farmer, with Brett. And this year, his family farm donated 36,000 pounds of potatoes. That's a whole lot of spuds. But hey, Brett, salute to you. Thanks for what you do to help out others who are in need. Well, coming up this hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, we'll be talking with Chris Martin later on in the hour about Facebook and some of their recent struggles. But first, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be talking movies with Adam Holtz. He's next here on Faith Radio Mornings on Faith Radio. And thanks again for listening to Faith Radio Mornings on this day after Thanksgiving. And, of course, maybe you have time this weekend. You want to take in some family time at the movies. With that in mind, well, we bring on right now Adam Holtz from Plugged In. And, Adam, thanks for joining me this Friday morning. I'm sure it was a busy day yesterday.
You know, it's always busy on Thanksgiving, but we had some great time with our family. And really, that's what it's all about, right?
And how many leftovers are still in the fridge?
Well, you know what? We really like food, so there actually weren't that many leftovers. We got one of those unnamed ham store baked hams. we got a lovely honey baked ham, and so
I love those.
Those things are so huge; it's hard to get through of all one of those in one sitting, even with a big family.
Right.
But other than that, a few other leftovers.
Those are wonderful, though. Well, with the weekend, a few more days ahead here until people have to head back to work and school. So a great time to hit some of the movies. And well, with that in mind, the one I've been thinking about is the new one, Ralph Breaks the Internet. It's the sequel to the hit from, it's hard to believe, it was 2012 when Wreck-It Ralph came out.
I'm always surprised with sequels how big the gap is, because it feels like it was 2 years ago, and, you know, it was 6 years ago. It's, I think, just an indication of how fast things move. Ralph Breaks the Internet is, in fact, a sequel to that. And Wreck-It Ralph was about a video game character who basically destroys things and gets labeled as the bad guy in his game, and he wants to become a good guy. And so this sort of picks up where that story left off. In that movie, he met a feisty young girl named Vanellope, who is a racer in a game called Sugar Rush. And as our story opens this time, Vanellope is bored with her game. It's the same thing every time, and she wants a little excitement in her life. And so Ralph tries to help her out by wandering into her game, in the game itself, and doing what he does best, breaking some things to shake things up. Well, it turns out that he breaks the video game itself, and it's in danger of being unplugged, which for a video game character is the equivalent of eternal decimation, really. You just go away. Annihilation, that's the word I was looking for. And so Ralph and Vanellope find out that the arcade they're in, they've just installed Wi-Fi, and there's something called the Internet, and they've heard that they can maybe find the part that they need. So they venture digitally into the wilds of the internet in search of this part and have lots of adventures and, you know, a fair bit of cinematic, cartoony peril. And, you know, that's what you get. So, and Ralph, of course, manages to do bad things to the internet, too, and so pretty much everything is in jeopardy. This is a cartoon character apocalypse kind of movie. But really, I'm overstating that.
Okay.
There's not really any spiritual content here to speak of. But it's about friendship. It's about what happens when things test our friendships, when we are not sure we want to be with the friends we're with, when friends maybe aren't loyal to us. And so some great themes here and lots for parents to talk about if they also want to wade through a lot of toilet humor and butt jokes and, you know, everything that goes along with that. So, you know, it's a pretty fun movie. It's got a lot of mild toilet humor to deal with, and some families don't have any problem with that at all, and other families would be like, you know what, our family just doesn't want to go there. So for those that are willing to deal with that, there are some really nice themes here, you know, scattered amid the toilet gags.
Okay. Well, I'm still interested. I saw the preview of it, and it's like, oh, I like the old one. I like the original. So,
yeah.
So it's a good continuation?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think it's a pretty satisfying story, and I mean, it's a really sweet movie, and again, different families have different tolerances for all of the, you know, silly toilet-related jokes, and so if you can deal with those, there's some nice stuff here.
All right. Another sequel out this weekend for those who liked Creed from a few years ago, a couple of years ago now, wasn't it 2 years ago?
No, it was 2015.
What? Oh, my.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. Well, it was kind of the, I wouldn't say a reboot of the Rocky franchise, but it's an extension of it, the movie Creed. And yep. Now Creed 2 is out. Now, give us the background on this.
Well, and the background on this is a fairly lengthy backstory. And, boy, are they mining the backstory for all that it's worth here. Creed is the last name of a boxer, a young boxer named Adonis Creed. And Rocky fans will know that Rocky battled Apollo Creed, mm-hmm. was one of his nemesis.
There you go. Going Latin on us here.
There. And that in Rocky IV, Apollo Creed is actually killed in the ring by Ivan Drago, who was played by Dolph Lundgren. And you'll remember lines like, he is like a piece of iron, I will break him, you know. Things like that stick in my 15-year-old memory from that time. So, fast forward, Adonis is now the champ, which is kind of the trajectory Rocky took. And once you're the champ, you have different, you know, conflicts you have to face. And with him, it's his pride, it's his hubris, and, you know, what do I do now? He's kind of bored. And so somebody suggests that he fight Ivan Drago's son. So, all right, here we go again. We're mining it for all it's worth. And his son's name is Victor, and Victor is kind of like Ivan. He's just this huge Russian lunk who destroys everything his fists ram into. And so that's the setup here. And in the midst of that, Rocky Balboa, who's played again by Sylvester Stallone, is one of his coaches and mentors and plays almost a relationship counseling role, trying to help Adonis really think about what's most important in his life. He's just gotten married or is about to get married and has a young child. And so it really is a movie that revolves around the question of what is worth fighting for and what things do we defend and what things do we just say, you know what, that really doesn't matter that much in the grand scheme of things. So if you saw Creed, you know what to expect. I don't think this is quite as compelling a movie as Creed was, but I think if you're a Rocky fan, you know, all of the story dots that get connected here will probably be pretty satisfying. And in terms of content, what parents need to know is the boxing is brutal. The violence here, if you're squeamish, you know, it is a bone-crunching movie, and, you know, you get those slow-mo shots and hear the awful things happening to people's innards when they get pounded. Bit of profanity, some allusions to sexual content, but really not too much of that. But if you saw Creed, you know pretty much what to expect. This continues that story, and it's a pretty good Rocky movie, if not perhaps as good Or as satisfying as Creed was.
There you go. Talking with Adam Holtz from Plugged In, and when we continue in a couple of minutes here, looking at another Robin Hood movie that's coming out. Plus, you know, this weekend, maybe you noticed it at the table yesterday, too many people pulling out their cell phones and scrolling through. Okay, guilty. Guilty, but anyway, we'll be talking about that in you too. Okay.
Well, you got to check the football scores.
Well, okay, good point. Good point. But this is Faith Radio Mornings. And we're back. This is Faith Radio Mornings for this Black Friday morning on Faith Radio. I'm Paul Perreault, sitting in for Peter Kapsner, who's roughing it right now down in Disney World with his family and some friends. So say a prayer for him. I'm sure it's just terrible. But we have Adam Holtz on talking movies because it is a long weekend, a lot of time for families to get out and enjoy. And, well, there this weekend, a new movie, another version of Robin Hood, like there's been how many in Hollywood history?
A whole bunch. And I think the last one was Russell Crowe in like 2010 or 2011. It wasn't even that long ago. I feel like the reboot cycles are just accelerating. It's like, you know, now it only takes 3 or 4 years to totally forget that, you know, we saw this recently.
Oh, like Spider-Man.
Yeah, like Spider-Man. You know, how many times can we reboot Spider-Man? And, you know, later this winter, we've got Into the Spider-Verse, which is an animated, you know, story. It's a little bit different, but boy, they keep going to that well.
But anyway, back to Robin Hood.
Yeah, sorry. Well, this version of Robin Hood, you know, what is there to say about a movie and a story that have been done so many times? This one takes a little bit of liberty with the story that we're familiar with. And in it, Robin of Locksley, who is a sort of pampered noble, ends up going off to the Crusades because the Sheriff of Nottingham, you know, as is typical of the Sheriff of Nottingham, doesn't like him very well and is hoping that he'll just go overseas and get killed. Well, he doesn't. He comes back a better archer, and the Sheriff of Nottingham is as wicked as ever, and then in Robin's absence, Marion thinks he has died, and she's with another guy, and the sheriff is just awful. And Robin comes back with a new friend from the Crusades who is a Muslim, and his name is John. And John says, you know, we really need to take this to the next level. We need to really train you on how to be the best archer and fighter and, you know, hooded defender of justice that you can possibly be. And so then we get, you know, the story that we're pretty familiar with. You know, I will say that that one of the villains here is a Catholic cardinal. He's just known as the Cardinal. I'm not even sure he has a name. And the Catholic Church itself is depicted as power hungry and greedy and domineering. So it's not a very flattering picture of the Catholic Church. And, of course, here we get lots of arrows doing lots of damage, and it's amazing how much damage an arrow can do. And all sorts of new arrow-oriented weapons that just blow lots of things up. And that's probably the biggest issue here. You know, there's a smattering of profanity. There's a smattering of sensuality. It's implied that Marion lived with Robin out of wedlock and is living with her current guy out of wedlock. But it just sort of feels like, okay, how can we reimagine Robin Hood and yet doing so in a way that just doesn't work very well. I told my wife the other night, just watching the commercial, I said, I have no interest in seeing this movie at all. And in fact, it's really not a very good movie just from an aesthetic point of view. It feels like a hodgepodge of lots of other stuff. So I don't know. I don't know that I would plunk down my money on this, even if you're willing to deal with the content issues in play here.
Stick with Errol Flynn?
Stick with Errol Flynn or even Russell Crowe.
Oh, there
or,
you go.
You know, Kevin Costner or, you know, take your pick, right?
Cary Elwes. There we go.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, one more thing before you go, Adam, is a blog you put up, and here it is. We're into the holiday season. Maybe it was a problem yesterday. You were checking the football scores on your cell phone while at the dinner table, which caused you to check something else on your cell phone. Okay.
Yeah, it's just a black hole, isn't it?
It really is. And you put up on the blog at Plugged In about how often are we checking our cell phones, especially, well, as we try and do family togetherness.
Well, there's a new survey out from a company called Deloitte Consulting, and they have said that the average person checks his or her smartphone 52 times a day. And I suppose it says something about me that figure felt low to me. but I think that we certainly are living in a time when we have a moment of silence or a thought comes into our head or, oh, hey, I'll look it up on Google. I mean, how often do you solve conflicts these days by, you know, well, let's look it up. Back in the day, it could have just been, well, I think I'm right. No, now we have an answer to everything. There's no mystery left. And so whether it's news, whether it's Facebook, social media, mobile games, you name it, Instagram, whatever your hobby is, there are lots of reasons to pick up a smartphone. And it actually, you know, scientists have shown that it's sort of like training rats with one of those little pellet dispensers. It gives them a little hit of dopamine. It fires the pleasure centers of the brain, and you just want more of it. And so I think all of us, it's not just teens and kids, but parents too, I think we would do well to just say, how am I using my phone, and you know, what are some boundaries I can put in place that maybe help us step back from that constant temptation to check, you know, what's happening out there in the World Wide Web.
Would you suggest maybe when Christmas dinner comes up, do you put up the what did Chick-fil-A call it? The cell phone coop? Everybody's cell phones?
Yeah, the cell phone coop.
Go in the box?
I think that's it sounds funny, but I think that's a good idea. And I think instead of just saying, I'm going to, you know, use my smartphone less, it's sort of like saying, I'm going to eat less or I'm going to spend less money. That intention alone probably isn't going to really help. But to come up with a concrete plan, you know, when I get home from work, I'm going to put my phone down and just be present with my family for an hour or 2 hours without looking at it. Or, you know, phone-free meals. I think that's a great one. Meals are a time to really look each other in the eye and say, you know, how's your day? What's going on? What do we need to talk about? What was awesome today? So I think if we can carve out concrete spaces where we say, no, I'm going to just turn it off or put it in another room for right now. See, I can't even bring myself to say I'm going to turn it off, right?
It feels like it's dying.
Exactly. What could happen while my phone is off?
Exactly.
So anyway, I think that's the right strategy. You know, carve out spaces where we're not doing this. And I think then if you begin to develop those habits, it's easier. We break ourselves of that habit, and it becomes less of an issue.
Okay. So how are you going to do that the rest of the time with your family this weekend?
Oh, boy, you're really going to put me on the hook for my own console?
Hey, well, you were the one to first admit you had the problem.
Right. This has turned into an intervention.
Okay, maybe we just ended right there. But, hey, Adam, thanks again for joining us, taking time out on this Friday morning here on Faith Radio Mornings.
So glad to be with you, Paul, and have a great rest of your Thanksgiving weekend.
All right, thanks. This is Faith Radio Mornings. Stay with us. You got to love a wonderful story of generosity and honesty. Out of Edmonton, Canada, there's a homeless man named Adam Gilliam. He was rummaging through the garbage one day and found this print of Bambi. And he thought, well, I might be able to get a few bucks off of it. So he went over to Curiosity Incorporated, an antique dealership. Alexander Archibald looked at it and said, it's probably a reprint, but I might be able to make some money off of it. So here's $20 for it. Well, as he was taking off the broken frame and cleaning it, he noticed the certificate of authenticity. This was an original 1937 Bambi print from Disney. Well, anyway, he was able to sell that print once it's cleaned up for $3,700. And he thought, you know, I got to find Adam. He deserves more of it. So he found Adam, hunted him down, and gave the homeless man half of the proceeds from that. Amazing. This is Faith Radio Mornings. More in a moment.
This is the Faith Radio Network. Listen anywhere, anytime, online at myfaithradio.com.
Ever wonder if God is truly working in your kids? Sometimes, does it feel like He's overlooked your family? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Let me offer a fresh perspective. Maybe God is answering your prayers right now. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it, but the teen that's spiraling out of control in your home could be the tool God uses to grow your faith. Perhaps the conflict you're facing right now is the intentional lesson God designed specifically for you and your kids. So stop and think. Look back to the year behind us and the year we're about to start. Determine right now to watch for the answers to your prayers coming your way. Don't lose heart. God is working. God's answering prayers right in the midst of your struggle.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
And thank you for joining us on Faith Radio Mornings on this day after Thanksgiving. I'm Paul Perreault, sitting in for Peter Kapsner. And as one of our usual Friday guests is, we have Chris Martin, don't call yourself the Millennial Evangelical anymore. But Chris, thanks for having us. I mean, you closed that blog, but you're still quite busy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm still pretty busy. And this week I made sure I haven't taken proper vacation days. You know, I've taken a couple off here and there for church stuff that I do. I'm on staff at our church. But I've not taken proper vacation days since February when my wife and I went to Disney World. So I took a couple of days off earlier this week before the Thanksgiving holiday to just kind of, you know, just kind of unplug my brain a little bit, to just not really think about a whole lot. And so it's been nice to take a bit of a break. But I am still busy despite not doing the Millennial blog anymore.
And imbibing in some turkey, I guess.
Oh, yeah, too much of it, as usual. We had a couple Thanksgivings. My wife and I are from the same hometown, which is great because you get to spend time with all of your family, but difficult because you spend time with all of your family, not in a bad way, but you're bouncing around town all the time. You know, you feel like sometimes you spend more time in the car than you do hanging out with people.
Yeah, really. So, well, since we have you on, and right now you work with Lifeway Social, which is, as an organization, what are you doing as part of Lifeway? Help people understand what you are, because that's going to lead into our conversation.
Sure. So I do a lot of things related to social media at Lifeway Christian Resources. So I do have a service called Lifeway Social, through which I try to just kind of coach or help churches or Christian nonprofits or authors improve their social media if they would like help doing that, because it can be overwhelming. A lot of people don't understand it. And then also, just as of a couple of weeks ago, I manage the Lifeway Twitter and the Lifeway Facebook and the Lifeway Instagram account. Well, a coworker of mine manages the Lifeway Instagram account, and so I'm kind of I'm helping people do their social media better, and I'm maintaining ours all at the same time.
Okay, because that leads into our discussion, because social media has been going through rapid changes through the years, and now there's a lot of concerns about its direction, how it's handling things. So let's talk about some of those things, including recently Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg publishing a letter, a lengthy letter, talking about how they're adjusting their algorithm to, as he put it, to help limit stuff that may not go above the line as far as being forbidden topics. But if it gets close to that line, they want to, I guess, suppress. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, sure. So Facebook's going through a really difficult time right now. Their motto used to be, I think they've abandoned this because it's kind of bad for PR nowadays, but their motto used to be move fast and break things. And so they're still kind of doing that, but people are expecting more of them now. In 2007, 2008, when Facebook was really just bursting onto the scene and everybody was adopting it for the first time, which, if you can believe, was 10 years ago now, people kind of gave them the grace that there wasn't much regulation or much concern about what Facebook could do. It was just something people did online. But obviously, through the last couple of years, through the ways that international forces tried to manipulate Facebook to tamper with elections, or the way people were perceiving elections, whether they showed up to vote or not, and all kinds of other ways, Facebook is coming under a lot of heat for all kinds of things, both how people are manipulating its algorithms and its systems for malicious international reason, you know, like serious issues. But then at the same time, they're kind of being put on the hook more for the mental wellness people have or perhaps don't have when using social media. Social media has been clearly shown to cause higher rates of depression and feelings of stress. And people are obviously, you know, it's up to us to decide how we're using these platforms. It's not the problems are not wholly on Facebook or Instagram or these other platforms. We have to have a little bit of ownership of our own actions as well. But people are expecting just a little bit more. They have higher expectations of platforms like Facebook than they have in the past. And so they're trying to do things, bless their heart, they're trying to do things to work for the betterment of their users. Unfortunately, a lot of times, what's best for users isn't best for advertisers on Facebook. And so they kind of live in this tension where they want to please advertisers, but they want to do what's best for users. And one of the things that, as you've alluded to, one of the things that Facebook is really wrestling with right now is changing the way content is delivered through their algorithm so that, you know, obviously there are things that are off limits on Facebook, like nudity is off limits on Facebook, scenes of graphic violence off limits on Facebook, like those things will get pulled down one way or another, usually by a computer program, but then also by human interaction as well. And what they're trying to do, you know, that's over the line. Well, they're also trying recently, like you said, Mark Zuckerberg, they posted a statement earlier or last week about trying to curtail content that even gets close to that line. So content that might not be malicious or may not be even, you know, trying to tamper with an election, let's say, but could be misinformation about something more trivial even. That may not be crossing the line in the old way Facebook has thought of things, but that's definitely approaching the line. Or clickbait, an article that has a title that is completely misleading so that when you click on it, you don't get what you want. And that's ultimately what this comes down to. Obviously, Facebook wants to protect its users from abuse, from seeing things they don't want to see that are clearly considered inappropriate by broader culture. But what Facebook also wants to do is their number one goal, other than making money, is keeping their users happy, because that's the main way they make money. And so if you see a title of a link and you click on that link expecting to get content that's related to that title and you don't get that, you're going to be unhappy, and Facebook doesn't want that. They want you to be as happy as possible, because the more happy you are coming to Facebook, the more you will come to Facebook. And so Facebook is trying to change the algorithm, and here's what is so frustrating to me, both as a believer and as someone who just tries to advocate for upright morals, regardless of if you're a Christian or not. Facebook does a really good job of writing statements like this about how we want to change the algorithm to benefit you, to make the Facebook experience better for you. And there might be a little bit of truth in that, but ultimately they want to make the Facebook experience better for us the users, because if they do that, ultimately they make Facebook more successful. And I really think that's the ultimate goal. Maybe I'm a little bit too mean about that, but I just really think that's the reality.
Okay. We're talking with Chris Martin from Lifeway Social, and I guess one of the questions I have, because I've seen various reports, maybe not Facebook itself, but other social media platforms that would pull back or at least censor somebody for saying something, for example, from a theological standpoint, whether you agree with the theology or not, it gets pulled or deleted or whatever, and their account is frozen, and there's that concern. Do you have that? Because here you're working with Lifeway, a Southern Baptist organization, and your job is to help promote spiritual matters. Does that affect you? Are you concerned about that?
Yeah, I am. And I'm not concerned about Christians specifically. Let me make sure that's clear. I've not seen any – you know, I run Facebook ads – multiple times a week, every week. Lifeway as an organization runs Facebook ads multiple times a week, every week. When you submit a Facebook ad through artificial intelligence, Facebook reviews that content. I have sometimes had ads rejected by Facebook, but that's because a word in the title or a word in the text could be perceived by artificial intelligence as somehow being offensive, right? So let's say we're talking about a Christian view of sexuality. That article may be rejected, not because they want to suppress a Christian view of sexuality, but because Facebook's being careful about content regarding sexuality on their platform. You know, and so it's important for Christians not to get the sort of victim mindset that we're getting attacked. I've seen that far too much, because they're rejecting a lot of content that we would consider very not Christian and very not maybe conservative politically or theologically as well. But this is freedom on the internet. Freedom of distribution of content is a super interesting topic. There are all kinds of limits that we would all agree should be enforced. But, you know, what is acceptable and unacceptable? We just saw that recently with the man who went and shot up the synagogue in Pittsburgh. I forget the name of the website. That, in fact, I think I talked to you guys about it. But Gab, that's exactly right. So he was posting on Gab about how much he didn't like Jewish people and all of those things beforehand. And so Gab kind of got shut down temporarily. It's back up. But obviously saying nasty things about various groups of people is a problem. But if we're going to draw lines, moral lines in the sand when it comes to what's appropriate on the internet and what's inappropriate, we should always be aware of what those are, because depending on how much the goalposts move, depending on how much culture moves and what it decides is appropriate and inappropriate, it could start to affect bigger groups of people more than just anti-Semites or others that we right now all agree are problematic.
Okay. We're talking with Chris Martin here on Faith Radio Mornings. When we come back, we'll talk a little more social media. Also, hopefully get some time to talk, since we're getting into the Christmas season, about millennials and how they celebrate Christmas. So stay with us. This is Faith Radio Mornings. Again, thanks for tuning in to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault, filling in for Peter Kapsner, and Chris Martin from Lifeway Social is our guest this segment. And, you know, we were talking social media and Facebook, and it wasn't too long ago, Chris, that Facebook purchased Instagram. And now, remind people, for those, because I'm not on Instagram, I'm a little old school, I guess, but what is Instagram?
Instagram is a social media platform built around images, where Facebook is a social media platform built around images or videos or links or just plain old text. Facebook is a little bit broader. Instagram is primarily built around pictures and videos. So it's a social media platform where people connect based on the images or videos they share.
Okay. And then one of the founding members of Instagram years ago, Bailey Richardson, was in the news recently. Can you tell us about her story and why you think that's important?
Sure. So Bailey Richardson is one of the original 13 employees working at Instagram in 2012, when Facebook bought the app for $1 billion. And let me pause on that for a second. Instagram was a company with 13 employees in 2012, which was only 6 years ago, and Facebook bought it for $1 billion, which at the time, fun fact, people thought Facebook was dumb. People thought Facebook was overpaying for Instagram for $1 billion. I read something the other day, it's worth at least hundreds of billions of dollars, $100 billion at this point, if anything. So it's super interesting how perceptions can change over just a few years. But she was working at Instagram at the time, and recently she and four others from that small group of people now say that, reading from an article here, now say that the sense of intimacy, artistry, and discovery that defined the early Instagram that they knew led to its success has given way to a sort of celebrity-driven marketplace that's kind of been designed to take time away from people and make them spend money. And it's true. Instagram used to be a little bit more – used to feel a little bit more organic, used to feel a little bit more grassroots. I mean, this is the case with just about any movement, any company, app, whatever you want to say. When it's young, when it's – kind of like, you know, working hard, when the people there are working hard, it's a small company, she feels like a mom and pop social media shop. That's what Instagram felt like before Facebook bought it. People were just kind of using it to share pictures of friends and family and what's going on in their life. And it wasn't that engineered. It wasn't that commercialized, I guess you could say. And nowadays, obviously, people are building entire life economy, making their money on Instagram, building their lives, making a career out of Instagram, which isn't silly. I mean, you can make a good living doing things like that. But it does change how Instagram feels very corporate now. It does feel very commercialized. And so I completely see what she means, but it's caused her to leave the platform, which is super interesting when someone, someone who helped start an organization, whether it's an app or something else, leaves because of how it's changed, because they don't like how it's changed. Definitely is cause for intrigue, and she's deleted the app and she's left it entirely. And it's, you know, I think we should think about that and consider, based on her relationship with apps and social media, if someone who helped found one of the largest social media platforms in the world today has decided that it may be unhealthy to engage with that platform, we should consider the same in our own life.
Maybe. Talking about engaging and millennials, we're like I mentioned, heading into the Christmas season here. And I saw some interesting research about, you know, how Christmas celebrations are morphing and changing, and how millennials, the growing generation here, is celebrating Christmas. So you guys are doing it a little differently than us older folks. So kind of explain that if you can.
Sure. So millennials are more likely to celebrate Christmas more likely to celebrate Christmas as a cultural holiday, less likely to celebrate it as a religious holiday. About 88% of millennials are planning on celebrating Christmas. This is actually data from Pew from last year, but suffice to say, I think it's probably pretty applicable to this year as well. So, a significant, obviously, most of America being Christian, 88% of millennials are planning to celebrate Christmas, but most of them are planning on doing it culturally. And I think the 32% of folks who are celebrating it religiously, I think more of us celebrate Christmas culturally than religiously than we would like to admit. I mean, I know that only in the past few years, you know, since I was probably in college, did I really start to celebrate it, you know, personally from a Christian perspective. Growing up, my parents did a really good job making it about Jesus and the birth of Christ and the incarnation and everything that all the meaning and life change that comes along with that. But as a kid, I think it's natural. You want gifts, or you want all the the music and the treats and everything that comes along with that. And I think, you know, I think there's a place for all of those things. I don't think there's anything wrong with those things, but millennials definitely are celebrating it more as a cultural holiday. Whereas baby boomers and Gen Xers, their parents and grandparents, are much more likely to celebrate it as a religious holiday. And I don't know if that's so much – part of that is definitely the secularization of millennials. Millennials mm-hmm. are less Christian than their parents and grandparents. But also, I just think as you get older, the cultural stuff tends to fall away a little bit. The gifts and all of the pomp and circumstance that comes with it tends to become a little less significant, and your faith becomes more important. So it'll be interesting as millennials get older. I'd love to see this study done in about 10 years and see if millennials still feel the same way or if it's a little bit more skewed toward the religious side.
I was wondering about that. We'll definitely see that. Now, one of the other interesting articles I saw around millennials and Christmas is the fact that unlike previous generations, millennials are more inclined to go for the real route when it comes to Christmas trees. And I thought that interesting because, I mean, we've joked before about how millennials – struggle with the idea of even having breakfast cereal because it takes too much time to pour milk in the bowl, and yet you're doing something as hard as trying to maintain a Christmas tree.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Yeah, I think the real – it's not surprising. I'd never seen this before, so I was really interested when you sent it to me. I'm not at all surprised that millennials have real Christmas trees – that are starting to opt for real Christmas trees more than fake Christmas trees because it goes with the sort of like organic, earthy, everything being – so much of millennials' lives is fake right now, you know, whether it be social media or things like that. And getting something that's real, that feels like bringing nature into your home, it very much goes with the sort of millennial aesthetic right now and the millennial lifestyle of wanting something that's kind of real and not fake feeling. It's not surprising to me. It is surprising to me a little bit just because so many millennials lack money, and buying a real tree multiple years in a row is actually more expensive than buying just a fake tree once. And so it is interesting to me that they would spend the money on that. But the actual idea of millennials going for a real tree is not super surprising. We don't have a real tree. I'm not part of this crew. We need a new tree because ours is the small one we used to have in our apartment, and we have a house now. But maybe one day we'll get a real tree. It is a lot of work, though, like you said.
Oh, it is, especially if you try and keep it for, you know, it used to be just you had it for a few days, and now you're trying to extend it out weeks at a time. Yeah, it's very difficult. Well, Chris Martin's been our guest this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. Chris, have a happy Advent season.
Yeah, you guys as well. Talk to you soon.
Boy, did those 2 hours go really quick. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault, filling in for Peter Kapsner, who will still be on vacation for the first part of next week. So I'll join you on Monday morning right here, 6 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Eastern, here on Faith Radio with more Faith Radio Mornings. Have a great rest of the weekend. Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.